The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericasports.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you ready to talk sports with one of the leading sports journalists of today? Welcome to All Around Sports with John Inglesby. John's years of experience as a journalist has allowed him to net exclusive interviews with the top players, former players, commissioners, and owners. John and his guests are ready to give you the straight word when it comes to sports. Now, let's talk All Around Sports. Here's your host, John Inglesby.
Voice America listeners, welcome to the 64th ever and Friday the 13th edition of All Around Sports. Each Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we broadcast live from Boston to go all around the world of sports for 1 hour to discuss what happened this week and what's coming up for the weekend. To join the show, the call-in number is 1-888-346-9144, or you can email me at iir@comcast.net. comes to me through my website at www.iirsports.com. As always, I will give you my highlights, lowlights, and bizarre news items from this past week, as well as discuss my event of the week that I attended. Also, I will be joined by A.P. Stedham of Bama Magazine, as well as Barry Rubenstein of the New York Post. Well, during this, the slowest sports week of the year, it's all about Penn State and the Free Report. So my highlight of the week was the release yesterday, finally, of the Free Report regarding the Penn State scandal. And finally getting to the bottom of things and laying out the facts for all to see. My lowlight of the week was the Free Report's confirmation that the four most powerful men at Penn State did nothing about Sandusky for fear of bad publicity for the football program. While completely ignoring the child victims, and this allowed countless more victims to have their lives ruined by the child pedophile Sandusky. My bizarre story of the week, sticking with the scandal, is the number of high-profile people still refusing to accept the fact in the last 24 hours that Joe Paterno allowed this to go on. The facts are unmistakable. And the reality is that he was the only person who could have stopped it and still have kept his job. As my listeners know, I grew up in central Pennsylvania near State College. So I truly, truly understand the power that he possessed, but in this case did not use. So while this cover-up is now bared once and for all, confirming it as the worst sports scandal ever, the university's board of trustees are meeting as we speak in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And it's my belief they must immediately shut down the football program. As I said when the story broke late last year, Penn State should not have played Nebraska that following weekend, and they certainly should not have played the subsequent bowl game. They should have followed the lead of the University of Miami, of all institutions, who voluntarily, at the end of last year, did not go to a bowl game after their own scandal, which obviously pales in comparison to the Penn State scandal. You know, it's a world turned upside down from what we once thought, when longtime renegade Miami did the right thing late last fall, and Penn State did not. And now there's rumblings coming out of Miami again that they are considering not going to a ball game this year in the wake of another possible violation involving a player. So now the Penn State trustees have one more chance to follow the U's lead and finally do the right thing. It's time to reassess step back and shut down the program until they get everything straightened out down there in central Pennsylvania. Well, my event of the week that I covered was the International Sports Engineering Conference at the University of Massachusetts campus in Lowell, Massachusetts. It was a timely event with some serious brain power in attendance, with approximately 200 sports engineers and equipment makers discussing timely topics such as what maximizes athletes' performances in events taking place in the upcoming Olympics, the Tour de France, which is happening as we speak, and this week's Home Run Derby. So I started my day by interviewing John Brinkus, the host of ESPN's popular sports science show. And John opened the conference with a keynote address, and these are some of the topics that he covered.
This is John Inglesby from Voice America Sports Network, and I'm here at the International Sports Engineering Conference in Lowell, Massachusetts. And John, can you tell us a little bit about the keynote address that you just delivered this morning?
What I wanted to cover in the keynote address is really the commonalities between the world's greatest athletes. I think one thing that people think is that great athletes just simply wake up and are amazing, and it's simply not true. You know, the fact that the world's greatest athletes work harder than their competitors. That's what they do. They focus, they practice perfectly, they don't just practice, and they really sort of set out goals that they want to achieve.
And John, I'm a big fan of your show. I've seen it often on ESPN. And can you tell me a little bit about the history of how you brought that to fruition so that it was on the air?
Yeah, I own a production company with my partner called Base Productions, and we did two different kinds of programming, sports programming and science programming. And through a series of different shows, we did a show called XMA, Extreme Martial Arts, then we did a show called Fight Science, then from Fight Science came Sports Science. We really sort of fused sport and science together into, obviously, sports science. It started over on the Fox Sports Network. We won a bunch of Emmys there. Then ESPN came along and acquired the property. And, you know, we've been on ESPN for many years and hopefully many years to come.
And did you notice anything in last night's Home Run Derby that you thought was of interest?
Yeah, in the Home Run Derby, what's interesting to me is that those guys can swing a bat really, really fast. It's all about bat speed. You know, a lot of people think that it's about strength, but it's just bat speed, and bat speed is through kinetic linking. Strength can overcome inefficiencies in a kinetic chain or can add to it, but it's not just that you're strong. It's really that you're efficient.
And do you put any stock into the concept that it might mess up hitters' swings? I grew up in Pittsburgh, so I'm a big fan of Andrew McCutchen, and there's a lot of debate in the last 48 hours about would it mess up his swing in particular, but what are your thoughts on that?
You know, when you swing a bat a million times in your life, and then you take, you know, 50 to 100 swings like a home run derby, I don't know if that really can counteract it. But one thing that it can do is it certainly can psychologically mess you up. I mean, I don't think you know, people talk about muscle memory. That's a misnomer. There really is no such thing as muscle memory. It's really just the neural pathways that are burned, you know, into your nerves. Like, it does not, your muscles don't remember anything, but your mind remembers a lot. So I think that the best way to think about it is a piece of music that you're playing. You know, once you remember how to play it, you're always going to remember how to play it as long as you play it you know, a reasonable number of times. If you don't play it for a really long time, then you'll forget it. And something like the Home Run Derby, I mean, you're only taking a break for a couple of days. So I don't think that it's really going to alter the swing. It might psychologically affect it, but I don't think physiologically it's going to do anything.
And John, finally, between your show on ESPN, conferences such as this that you were the keynote speaker at this morning, what do you see out on the horizon for sports engineering?
I think that you're going to see a lot of teams creating positions where they're going to want a sports scientist, someone who's at the forefront of technology to help as much as possible. But along with that, I think you're going to see an explosion in just the field of psychology. Because I think that what we understand from technology is, yes, technology works, but it, more importantly, breaks down mental barriers. Whether or not a piece of technology actually works, if you believe it works, then it will work. So there's a lot of chicken and egg analysis that needs to be done on, you know, does something in fact help in terms of technology, or is it just simply breaking down a psychological barrier?
Well, John, thank you very much for your time, and best of luck during the rest of the conference.
Thanks so much.
And that was my conversation with John Brinkus from ESPN Sports Science, an impressive fellow, as you just heard. And I also had a moment to speak with Patrick Drain, who is the conference chairman and assistant director of the Baseball Research Center at UMass Lowell. And here's what Patrick had to say.
So the Sports Engineering Conference, it's an international gathering of scientists and engineers from around the globe, about 20 different countries represented, and they're all presenting their research, which they've published papers and technical for technical proceedings on a wide variety of sports, including cycling, baseball, soccer, table tennis. Every sport you can think of is pretty much represented at this conference.
And it's certainly timely. I just attended a session regarding the Tour de France, which is occurring as we speak, and I know there's going to be some presentations having to do with the Olympics. And also, I know you work at the, our assistant director, I believe, at the Baseball Research Center here at UMass Lowell, which is probably a large part of the reason why you're hosting the conference. Can you tell us a little bit about the Baseball Research Center?
Yeah, so at the Baseball Research Center, we've been around for about 13 years. We're involved in a lot of the dynamic testing related to the bats and the baseballs. We work with Major League Baseball, the NCAA, Little League Baseball. And that's really the reason that we're hosting the conference, is because we've had this engaging research area at UMass Lowell and wanted to be able to bring in the research from around the globe that's related to the sports engineering field and showcase the research that we've been doing in the baseball lab.
Wonderful, Patrick. And lastly, given that the Home Run Derby was last night, the Baseball All-Star Game is obviously tonight. Any thoughts from the Baseball Research Center on again, the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game?
Well, we deal with wood bats and the baseballs, and obviously we study the performance of the bats. But a lot of it's related to really keeping the integrity in the game, and the All-Star Game and the Home Run Derby are great ways to showcase just what's possible by the elite players that play at Major League level.
And that was Patrick Drain, Conference Chairman from the International Sports Engineering Conference held this week at UMass Lowell, talking about both the conference itself and the Baseball Research Center at UMass Lowell. And I also spoke with Professor John Eric Goff. He's a physics professor at Lynchburg College in Virginia and the author of Gold Medal, M-E-T-A-L, Physics, the Science of Sports. And Professor Goff delivered one of the keynote addresses as well, and this is what he had to say.
This is John Inglesby, host of All Around Sports on Voice America Sports Network, and I'm here with Professor John Eric Goff of Lynchburg College, who is one of the keynote speakers at the International Sports Engineering Conference occurring here at UMass Lowell. And Professor, I attended your session this morning having to do with the Tour de France, and knowing it's so timely, occurring as we speak, I was hoping to get your thoughts, if you could share with our audience, on the Tour de France.
Well, today's a rest day, so I'm sure cyclists are getting ready for a pretty grueling mountain stage tomorrow. There's a 7.1% climb in the middle of tomorrow's stage, so they're going to really need their rest today. What I do with Tour de France is try to predict the winning time for each stage. And on my blog, I put the prediction ahead of time, and every day I update it, the new prediction for the next day's stage, and stick my neck out a little bit and see how well I do when the real thing is run.
And Professor, I know you're giving your keynote address on Thursday, and it will have to do with the Olympics, which are coming up here in, amazingly, just a couple of weeks. Can you share with our listeners some your thoughts about the Olympics and what you hope to cover in your keynote address?
Well, I think one aspect of the talk that I'm going to give has to do with how everyone sees the world differently. This is the first time I've been to a conference for engineers. I'm a physicist, so I've been to plenty of conferences with physics folk, but this is the first time I've been around mostly engineers, and it's a eye-opening experience to see how they view the world and how they interact with the sports world. And what I want to do on Thursday is give them a little impression of how a physicist watches the Olympics. What are things that I'm looking at when I see a weightlifter or a sprinter or a diver? What kinds of things tickle my mind when I'm thinking about the laws of physics in action when the athletes are performing at the pinnacle of their métier? So I'm very interested in giving people a sense that we all contribute something through our unique ways of seeing the world. And also, I'm interested in rallying a little support for getting our young people more interested in science. I think if you think about who the best scientists are in the world, they're children. They have an insatiable appetite for understanding and questioning, and we've all been, as a parent of two great girls who ask me questions all the time, you know, why is the sky blue, why are, you know, tires round, why does my hair not hurt when it gets cut, all kinds of great questions. But kids also have a great deal of credulity. I mean, they will believe whatever they're told, and we really want to impress upon them that science is about asking questions and really seeking the data and evidence to answer those questions. And I think it's a good thing to use sports in the classroom for young people. They resonate with some of the athletes today, and we can squeeze a little science in there and try to pique their interest in science.
And that was Professor John Eric Goff talking about the keynote address that he delivered yesterday. And lastly, here's Professor Goff talking a little bit more about the Olympics coming up in London in a couple of weeks.
All of them. There's not a sport out there that I could not listen to somebody or myself even talking about this, with the science behind it, the physics behind it. You think about something like we're taught in physics what the law of conservation of angular momentum is. People use this to study galaxies rotating, and they also use it in the subatomic world. The new Higgs boson that was discovered recently on the 4th of July, as a matter of fact. And we use that conservation law in vast scales of the universe, from the atomic world to the galactic world. And we also use it in sports, how divers can rotate their bodies, gymnasts rotating, even long jumpers can lengthen the length of their jump through things they do with their arms and legs in the air. So one law of physics can be applied in so many wonderful areas. And I see it all the time when I'm looking at different sporting events.
So there's a unique take on sports from the International Sports Engineering Conference at UMass Lowell that I had the pleasure to attend on Tuesday of this week. And again, I think I'll watch the Olympics, Tour de France, and even some baseball through a different set of eyes after attending these fascinating sessions. And now, as my former co-host, Lemont Williams from Outside the Huddle, likes to say, it's time to pay some bills, so let's take our break. And next up will be friend of the show, A.P. Stedham of Bama Magazine.
your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
Sports have become a big part of everyone's lives today. We all have that team that we live and breathe to follow. We watch hours of football on TV, play Madden Sports on our gaming system, and our wives can't seem to tear us from the couch. If this sounds like you, or if you're a football wife who wants a few words, we want to hear from you. Listen for Life, Love, and Sports, featuring your host, Ron Dixon. Ron takes you inside the world of sports and finds out what you, the fan, are talking about today. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Sports.
Football and so much more is the focus of Planet Gridiron with Damian Anderson. Join the former Arizona Cardinals running back for a show that mixes, well, a little bit of everything. Damian brings to the program life experiences playing football, and we'll talk about his variety of successes both on and off the field. The goal is to provide you with a fun perspective on life, family, success, and of course, football. Tune in to Planet Gridiron with Damian Anderson, Fridays at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern time, on the Voice America Sports Channel.
This week on The Revolution with Jim and Trav, brought to you by Whitetails Extreme.
This week we'll have Captain Ron the Alligator Hunter, hillbilly hand fishing expert Skipper Bivens, plus shark hunter Captain Leif Potter and sail fishing expert Captain Rick Brady. It's going to be a great show
when we talk about catching dangerous game in the water.
And as always, it's brought to you by Ram at RamTrucks.com.
Wednesdays at 1 Pacific on the Voice America Sports Channel. I'm Jim Ferguson. I'll see you on the trail.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
You're listening to All Around Sports with your host, John Inglesby. Become a part of today's show by calling 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Or by sending an email to IIR@comcast.net. Now, back to the show.
Voice America listeners, welcome back to segment two of All Around Sports. And I am your host, John Inglesby. And to join the show, the call-in number is 1-888-346-9144. Or you can email me at IIR@comcast.net. It's that time of the show when we typically have guests, and on the line with us now is friend of the show, A.P. Stedham of Bama Magazine. And A.P., how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great, John. Good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And A.P., you know, you've been on the show a number of times, but I think I remember that the first time you were ever on the show was driving from Connecticut down to State College last September to cover the Penn State-Alabama game. And I started off my show talking about the Penn State scandal, of course. And you know college football better than most, so I'd love to just get your thoughts on the free report that came out yesterday.
Yeah, John, that was the first time we ever spoke. I was driving to a place they call Happy Valley. I don't think it's be referred to that very many times in the future with what's happened and transpired in the last year or so. But it was a disappointing report, to say the least, to find out that the person everyone revered for his integrity and all the good things he did for college football, to find out that maybe he was behind the concealing of this tragic situation. So it's almost, if you drop down from another planet, you look at it as a Greek tragedy. I mean, Joe Paterno, who was revered more than he was by all the people who followed college football and the coaches. I mean, he had his sanctimonious moments through the years with some of the other coaches. I can recall him saying he didn't want to leave the football, college football world, to the Jackie Sherrills and Barry Switzers of the world.
Right, I remember that.
But it was certainly disheartening for all the Penn State people. I can't imagine it happening to them, what they think about all through the years, if this was just a facade, and it's a nightmare for them, really.
A nightmare is indeed the best word. There's just no other way to say it. You're right on the money talking about Happy Valley. I grew up in Happy Valley, basically half an hour away. And yes, there won't be any happiness there for a long, long time. I mean, the thing that there's so much to digest, and I know a lot of people are still digesting it. But over the past 24 hours, shall we say, the two words that keep pounding in my head are Louis Freeh's quote of the callous disregard for the victims over 14 years. It's so mind-boggling, and with the emails that a lot of us have read in the last week and a half, and that story was broken, by the way, by a high school classmate of mine, Susan Candiotti, from Altoona, from nearby State College. She knows Central Pennsylvania very well, like I do. And, she broke the email story. She works for CNN. And, just the way those emails were worded, I mean, and Freeh backed it up yesterday by saying, again, the victims were not even in the thought process.
Yeah, that was really pitiful, for people who are in the, I use the word kid business, to not consider their feelings and their thoughts or their parents and all their family members. I just can't imagine. These are all very smart men, and they've been around young men and people their whole life, decades, and why they never considered the victims. I just don't know it. And when you look back at it, John, you're thinking that, 1998 something came up, and then maybe that wasn't handled very well. And then you had another chance in 2001 to maybe rectify that error in judgment.
Correct.
And then it's
point.
Still, fell on deaf ears. And I can't comprehend, I can't really understand what Joe Paterno was trying to accomplish with some of the ways he handled this situation. I don't know.
Exactly. And none of us do know, and none of us are really ever going to know, because now, since Paterno's passing, anything that anybody says, is called into question, because now they're just covering themselves, obviously. I mean, for me, and I watched the news conference live with Louis Freeh yesterday, and basically what went on, what exactly was said in the conversation between Tim Curley, the AD, and Paterno, and a reporter, to his credit, actually asked the question, and Freeh did not elaborate, unfortunately, but I would have loved to have seen a follow-up question. Basically, Freeh said, Paterno has passed, so we won't know from there, and he didn't elaborate on exactly what Curley said, assuming that he talked to Curley, and I would love to know if it was, quote, a direct order, so to speak, Curley, don't talk about it or whatever, or, because then the follow-up Curley email after this meeting basically said to Spanier and Schultz, basically that Joe, quote, suggested, that authorities not be told, and that's pretty much where it died. I would have loved to have heard the follow-up question. I don't know that we would have got an answer, but I would have loved to, that just personally jumped out at me, since that appears to be the sort of key moment, if you will.
I think so, John. You're exactly correct. They violated some laws in there, I'm sure.
Right.
And,
oh, yeah.
And, I've heard, when it first came to light, some of the people were saying how maybe it was a generational thing with Joe. He didn't really quite grasp the magnitude of the situation, understand everything. But everyone knows abuse. It doesn't matter the age. I don't, I didn't really buy that when it first came out about him not understanding an assistant coach being a pedophile. I mean, everybody should understand that situation. It doesn't matter the age or the generation. So I never did buy that.
I definitely appreciate what you're saying. I remember hearing that, and it's you. And in light of the Freeh report, you just can't even use that anymore. No one can use that anymore as, you know, quote, an excuse or a rationale, shall we say. But, yeah, it's, you know, I think the person, the big loser of the last 2 weeks, if you will, in this whole situation is going to be Graham Spanier. I mean, we've all seen, you know, Tim Curley and Gary Schultz being head downed right into the back of police vehicles, and they're under indictment, I believe, for perjury. They've been charged. But Spanier, who I think I read this morning, is still on the payroll, if you can believe that. The former president of Penn State, he is, I think he is the guy that is really, really going to, take the heat now. I assume he is going to get arrested or charged in some form or fashion. And he hasn't been yet, but I certainly believe he will be based on everything we heard yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, when you're at the top, I mean, I heard Matt Millen yesterday speaking, and he said,
when
you're at the top of the food chain, I mean, no matter what anyone underneath you might suggest, you're the one, you have the stamp of approval on the decision. So you can't back away from it. If you're the commander on the ship, there's no hiding from that responsibility and that authority that you had, you know, and you had the power.
Exactly. And, you know, the emails show that he had a certain awareness. He is the one, according to those emails, that used the word vulnerable, i.e. Penn State could be vulnerable if they didn't report it to authorities. This was immediately in the aftermath of Curley emailing about what, you know, his meeting with Paterno. So it's I mean, the buck stopped with Spanier, despite the fact that clearly Paterno was the most powerful man at the university and in the state of Pennsylvania. That is unquestioned. I lived it my entire life growing up,
right.
And so, you know, again, I can bring personal testimony to the fact that Paterno was the most powerful man in the state.
Oh yeah, without question. I'll tell you a funny story. Well, on a kind of a sad story, but today it's not the day to be funny, but
right.
When Alabama was supposed to be playing Penn State the first time, Bear Bryant, he called up Joe Paterno and asked him, could you get us a police escort from the airport in Harrisburg? I mean, that's the type of authority that Coach Bryant thought Joe Paterno had in that state.
That is a good story.
Joe Paterno kind of laughed about it, and he said, I can't do that, but other people perceived his power. And so that's there's no question he had that power, John. John, I was going to ask you this question. You know, they have the statue of Joe Paterno there. I had some thoughts about just leaving the statue or taking it down, but I was wondering what you thought. I'll give you mine if you want first, if whatever's best for you.
I'll throw it out there. I mean, good question. It's a hot topic today. I think they need to take it down, and I think they need to take his name off the library because – for all the, when you hear the name Joe Paterno forevermore, you're just going to think of this case, period. That's it.
Yeah.
So for me, any reminders, especially a statue outside, you know, outside Beaver Stadium, is just a bad reminder. And
yeah.
So I just don't think it serves anybody's purposes, including Paterno's legacy in the family and the university and just everyone involved. It's just, can't be wiped off, you know, wiped out of the thought process now. That's it.
Yeah, I would say, John, that the people of Penn State have to make that decision. You know, a lot of outsiders will have an opinion. But I don't know. I was thinking that maybe something good could come out of this tragic situation. I was thinking that maybe some of his former players can get together and contribute some funds to some type of organization that would make people aware of child abuse. Maybe that could be a much better legacy for Joe Paterno, that the next time they hear his name, at least when people are on campus and they're visiting, they might come by something that has the, you know, Paterno Child Abuse Center or something that will make people understand the serious nature of this behavior. And, you know, maybe that's something that, because he did so much good, for the university and all those student athletes. I mean, they love their coach. I mean, I can't imagine those young guys or the older gentlemen now waking up and every day and thinking, this man coached me and I love this man, and all this happened at the end of his life and in the last 10 years. So we've got to do something. There was more to him than just serious error and judgment.
Yes, and, you know, I mean, you raise an interesting point and interesting wording as well, because the news broke yesterday, of course, that Nike and very, very strong backer of Joe Paterno, when the story broke last November, that, of course, being Phil Knight, the founder of Nike. But Nike yesterday announced they're changing the name of the Joe Paterno Child Development Center.
Right.
On the campus in Beaverton, Oregon. And just to hear you say the name of, like, I thought of this because you just used the name potentially of the Joe Paterno Child Abuse Avoidance or whatever center. You know, eradication would probably be a better word.
Right.
But, you know, just ironic that you would suggest that in the wake 24 hours later after his name literally is being removed from a building with the name Child as part of it. Well, AP, where do you think it goes from here?
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
with the Penn State program in general.
Yeah, I think there'll be some large settlements that'll close the chapter for all the victims. I think. I mean, I think that's a good idea for the university, and it seems like they're. You know, they're willing to adhere to those demands, I think, because they wouldn't have had that study paid for, you know, by Louis Free if they didn't want to, you know, stand up and take, you know, suffer the consequences. So I think that's the best for them. And then as far as on the football field, you know, the new coach, he disassociated himself from any type of activity and said that they're going to implement certain checks and balances going forward, and he actually has done pretty well on the recruiting circuit. You know, he got like a top 10 quarterback to commit there, and they've got some other very good recruits. So, and all the people of Penn State, they're going to rally and come to the games, and you know, Penn State will be on TV, and they'll receive those monies. So, you know, it's very difficult. I would say a decade worth of haunting, at least, by this incident. You know, and of course it'll go on longer for those who lived it. But
correct.
You know, I mean, there's nothing Penn State can do but go forward. I mean, that's life. I mean, no matter what happens in anyone's life, you know, you have to get up the next day and continue, no matter how bad it is. So. You know,
I agree. Well, the trustees are meeting in Scranton as we speak.
Yeah.
And a city you drove right through, I'm guessing, on the way down to Penn State that last September. And, yeah, you know, we'll see what they do. They need to do, quote, the right thing. I suggested at the top of the show, I think they need to take a break, impose the death penalty themselves on themselves, on the football program for at least this year. And, and just reassess, and that's what I think they need to do. There's a lot of stuff being floated out there, but we'll see what they do. I use the analogy, of course, that you know, the University of Miami, of all institutions, I'll call them now, former renegade program of them all.
Right.
You know, last year chose not to go to a bowl, and then I just heard this week that apparently there's another violation brewing, and they're considering again not going to a bowl game this year coming up. And for Miami to take that tactic and ignore the argument of, you know, the current players had nothing to do with it, so to speak. I give them credit, and Penn State just has to, in my mind, you know, adopt that same argument. They have to.
Yeah, you know? I wouldn't disagree with that, John. I mean, this is, I think, the worst situation I've ever seen in sports, I think. I don't know. I agree. I can't think of another one. I mean, I'm trying to think
of a second one. No, this stands alone, AP. I've been calling it since last November the worst story ever, period. That's it.
Yeah.
Worst sports story ever.
Yeah.
Well, we shall see. I myself am, again, you know, anxious to see what, if anything, the trustees do today, literally today. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I hope they do the right thing. But just to end it on sort of a, you know, you talk about Penn State and recruiting and all that. I know that you were... You were telling me a little bit about a story, a recruiting story of your own, since you have your finger on the pulse of these types of things.
Yeah, it was kind of a funny situation, John. Last December, a running back from Alabama had been committed to Auburn for maybe a year, and during the dead period, he switched to Alabama, and then he enrolled in January, and he had a press release, specific wording of a press release. Well, yesterday, the number one inside linebacker in the country, some say, Reuben Foster, he from Georgia, but he's now at Auburn High School, and he'll be playing there this year. He called a press conference, and he flipped from Alabama to Auburn, and he actually verbalized the same, almost word for word, what T.J. Yeldon did when he released a press release in December. So I thought that was kind of unique. I'd never heard that done before. He's kind of a stoking the fires down there.
So T.J. Yeldon is now going to
Alabama. Yeah,
Alabama.
He has not played a down at the University of Alabama, but he's a 6'2" running back, about 215 pounds. He was the MVP of the A-Day game, which is the spring game at Alabama. So that's quite a feat. I don't think that's ever been accomplished.
Wow. No, that's of great interest to me because T.J. Yeldon played in the U.S. Army All-American Bowl in San Antonio that I worked at this past January. I remember watching him on the field. He is a player. So, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, he's quite a talent, quite a talent. But, there's always something new in that Alabama-Auburn rivalry. When you think you've seen everything, something new jumps up.
Absolutely. Well, Good to end this segment with a little real football talk, since that's really what this show is all about. And AP, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to join me today, and look forward to having you again in the future.
Oh, thank you very much, John. It'll be a brighter note the next time.
I hope so, AP. And time for our break now, and coming up next will be Barry Rubenstein of the New York Post.
Your internet flagship station for sports.
Voice America Sports.
Sports have become a big part of everyone's lives today. We all have that team that we live and breathe to follow. We watch hours of football on TV, play Madden Sports on our gaming system, and our wives can't seem to tear us from the couch. If this sounds like you, or if you're a football wife who wants a few words, we want to hear from you. Listen for Life, Love, and Sports, featuring your host, Ron Dixon. Ron takes you inside the world of sports and finds out what you, the fan, are talking about today. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Sports.
Tune in to a show about making a comeback and what really goes on behind the scenes with your favorite athletes and beyond. Listen for The Comeback Radio Show with Tony Farmer. A lot of people believe what they read on the internet, hear and see in the media, and on the news. We're going to give our guests the chance to tell the real story without the extra hype. It's not just sports, although that will be a focal point of the program. We'll also look at the world of celebrities, music, modeling, and more. Listen every Thursday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Sports.
Your internet flagship station for sports, Voice America Sports.
You're listening to All Around Sports with your host, John Inglesby. Become a part of today's show by calling 1-888-346-9144. That's 1-888-346-9144. Or by sending an email to IIR@comcast.net. Now, back to the show.
Voice America. Welcome back to the fourth and final segment of All Around Sports. And back on the line with us is Barry Rubenstein of the New York Post. And Barry, how are you doing today?
I'm well, John. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And no surprise, during the slowest sports week of the year, we have devoted most of the program to the free report on the Penn State scandal. And, like in all things, I would love to get your take on it.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's pretty much what a lot of people are thinking. And, you know, I don't know how else you can really look at this other than, you know, as you mentioned before in the tail end of your segment with AP. I mean, it's probably the biggest or worst, however you want to look at it, the worst sports scandal ever. I mean, if you look at, you know, look at everything, it's really hard to come up with a story that's worse than this one was. And, you know, as we've been talking about for months, and, you know, I think it's just a culmination of everything we've talked about. I mean, you know, back when it first happened, you remember you and I talking about, you know, and of course this coming from the place where, you know, you and I both have, you know, PR backgrounds as well as sports backgrounds. You talk about crisis management, and you talk about being transparent and doing things the right way, and dealing with things when they first come up, and you know, just handling things in the right, proper manner. And, you know, we said at the time that Penn State did none of the above. I mean, they did everything the wrong way. And now, as we see the damning evidence of the free report, you know, it's pretty much the worst case scenario. I mean, these are some of the things that people have been kind of surmising and thinking, and, you know, what we've been talking about, you know, for the past several months, ever since the news broke this. And, you know, if we are to take the free report and look at it and judge it as, you know, this is the way it was, it can't get any worse for Penn State. I mean, you're talking about a program that, you know, where the top people in the program, including Joe Paterno, knew it was going on, chose not to act on it for fear of negative publicity. When, you know, ironically, I think if they had addressed it, you know, back in 1998 when these allegations, you know, toward Jerry Sandusky first came along, I think if they had handled it promptly and were proactive and put an end to it and gotten rid of Sandusky at that time, you know, I think they would have come out looking a lot better. They would have been looked upon as a school and a program and a coaching staff and a mentality that you know, dealt with this and, you know, and pretty much said, you know, we're not going to have this on our campus with our program. We're not going to have a child molester and a pedophile on our staff. We're not going to deal with this. But by choosing not to act, by choosing to ignore it, by choosing to not deal with any of the reports, not deal with any of the accusations, we saw untold victims added to the numbers that were involved with Jerry Sandusky. So, you know, obviously you're going to have appeals, you're going to have opposing viewpoints, you're going to have, like, you know, lawyers for Spanier and Curley and the Paterno family saying, well, you know, this is just one side of it, the other side of it. I don't see how you can defend any of this. I don't think there's any defense for it. I don't think there's anything anyone can say that will make anybody feel better, that certainly will not change what has happened to any of the victims, what they've had to deal with in their lives as a result of all this. You know, it just, as I said before, I think it's the absolute worst-case scenario for all involved, and it's unfortunate. It's a terrible, you know, and it's not the end of this yet. I mean, Sandusky still has to be sentenced, and then we have to find out, you know, how the legal system is going to deal with Spanier and Curley and some of the other people involved. So it's not over yet. The story is not going to end, and, you know, it's certainly Penn State is not being looked upon in a positive way by anybody, nor should they be. It's a horrific story, and sadly, it's not over. It's not going to end for some time. And I just think that, you know, again, everything handled the wrong way by Penn State, and we've seen that now right from the beginning of the whole story. And it's sad. It's just one of the saddest stories I think we can really. I can't think of anything worse that I can ever remember in sports. You know, something as far-reaching as this. So yeah, I mean it's just awful.
It really is, and that's a terrific synopsis, Barry, to put it mildly. And, yeah, I mean, the only thing I can even put in the category, really, or that just comes to mind is, you know, O.J. Simpson. There's no – what else can I say? Nothing else even enters the thought process except that one, and I'm not even – they're not – they're similar in one way, horrific crimes, period.
Right.
And it happens to be associated with sports people. But yeah, it's, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. I mean, I don't think yesterday was the low point, and it certainly wasn't the end. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. I really, really strongly believe that, because, you know, at the end of the day, there's only been one victim that I am aware of has actually spoke publicly. And I think that may happen going forward in the future. And I think once the civil suits start, and there are going to be many, many, many of them for gigantic amounts of money, but I think that's going to, you know, create a whole new level of information that we haven't seen yet. And frankly, I think it's going to be very ugly, to put it mildly. It's going to be graphic.
And, you know, it's at this point in the whole process, it's still very difficult for me, and I think for a lot of people too, to look at this as a sports story anymore, because it really isn't. It's transcended all of that. I mean, to me, it's even hard to even discuss the story in the regard to, well, how it's going to affect the football program. You know, I think it's gone way beyond that. And, you know, I think those questions will have to be brought up and resolved at some point, but I don't think we're at that point yet. And, you know, of course, it's going to be very difficult for them to recruit players. It's going to be very difficult to find people who want to associate with themselves with the university or with the program. You know, total cleaning house. I mean, they have done that to some degree, but they need to do more. And, you know, until we see the you know, the entire administration turned over and cleaned up and, you know, put this behind them, it's going to take a long time. We may not see it for years. We may not see reputation of Penn State change for a long, long time. And it's going to take a long, long time. It may take a generation or two, seriously, before Penn State is thought about in a positive way, or let's just say in not this kind of way. So yeah, it's going to be far-reaching. It's going to continue. It's not going to end anytime soon. And I don't know that we're going to have any answers anytime soon as far as how it affects the football program itself. We're just not at that point yet. It's too raw. It's too fresh. It's too painful for most of us to even really think about it in that way. So yeah, I mean the legal system's going to continue to try to deal with this, and a lot of moral issues to deal with, a lot of ethical issues to deal with, and, you know, quite frankly, I don't know how you turn it around at this point. I think there's just been too much damage done, and, you know, as you said before, you know, you're talking about the death penalty. You know, maybe a self-imposed death penalty would be one way to go about doing this. It would certainly be the first step in a process in what has to be some sort of healing process. It's going to take a long time, but, you know, maybe that's one way to go about it. Maybe the administration has to say, you know what, there's been so much damage done, we just need to take a step back from everything.
That's it.
And just let everyone, you know, let the legal system take care of this, and, you know, maybe that's a good way to do it. Maybe that's a good idea.
I think it's the only way to go. I think it's, you know, it's the obvious right thing to do. And speaking, just switching subjects from another organization that has had troubles on the field, that being the New Orleans Saints, we have breaking news for, I think, our third week in a row.
Oh, how about that?
We're, Yeah, we're down under 2 minutes. The Saints just signed Drew Brees to a 5-year, $100 million deal, $60 million guaranteed. Again, we're down under 2 minutes, Barry, but I'd love to get your quick take on that one. They had to do it. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, of course they did. I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. I mean, he's a Super Bowl champion, and they really didn't have much of a choice. You know, with everything else that's gone on, you know, at least they don't have to worry about the offensive side of the ball. Defense is another issue, but, offense is, keeping Drew Brees in the fold is, a no-brainer. They had to. So, good for the Saints in that regard. So, we've heard way too much about the problems that the defense has had. At least they don't have to worry about the offensive side of the ball.
Yes, and seeing Drew Brees during the ESPY Awards the other night, he is the face of the franchise. He did just set, the all-time passing yardage record. And he's, obviously the face of the franchise, one of the faces of the NFL. I always wonder why these things take so long, particularly this one. But, I guess negotiation deadlines are, at the end of the day, the one thing, the only thing that gets deals done. Yeah, that's it. Well, Barry, I just want to thank you for calling in, as always, and for your terrific perspective and synopsis on Penn State. We'll see where it goes from here. We're not going to have to wait long, I don't think. The trustees are meeting today, so we'll see what, if anything, they do. I've been very clear throughout the show. If I'm them, they need to act today. We'll see what they do, if anything.
I agree.
All right. Well, as always, thank you all for listening to All Around Sports, and we look forward to doing it all again next Friday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time.
Thanks again for tuning in to All Around Sports with your host, John Inglesby. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Sports Channel. Have a terrific weekend, and we'll talk sports again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Sports Channel.